The thing about smart people is like they really want you to know how smart they are. Like they don't want to help you.
Leak code, motherfucker. Today's episode is the perfect episode to follow up John Cricket's episode last week. I'm joined today by Neat Code, founder of Neat Code, both the platform and the YouTube channel. And he does a lot of Neat Code / Leet Code, right? And as we heard from John on the last episode, you know, his belief is that Leet Code is kind of overhyped as a way to prepare for job interviews and to upskill. And I want to play both sides of the fence, and we're having Neat Code on this week to give us the other side of the story or the other perspective. So could you just like introduce yourself for a second?
Yeah, for sure. So I think most people know me as Neat Code. I started like a YouTube channel about 4 years ago, making Leet Code problems. So I like to keep, you know, things pretty simple. And then I think about a year ago, I kind of like did a face reveal. So less people know me by my name, which is Navi. And I guess just a bit of history. So I started the YouTube channel 4 years ago. About a year after that, I started working full time as a software engineer at Google, and then did that for about a year and a half. So last January is when I left that job. And so I've been kind of doing YouTube full time since then. So I'm technically a content creator or like an influencer, but I really don't see myself that way.
You've got that X fang on your resume that I do not have. You're definitely one-upping me.
Yeah, I got that trophy. And I think that's, you know, that's like the best value about working at like a company, a big tech company, is you can say that you used to do that. So I take every opportunity to remind people where I used to work to add credibility to myself, even if I don't know what I'm talking about in like a specific scenario, because it just like automatically just adds credibility. So
yeah, you have to like sneak it in. Like, yeah, back when I was on the Maps team at Google, right? Like, sorry, I just want to make sure I understand the timeline a little bit. So you actually started the Neat Code YouTube channel, and just for everyone listening, it's Neat Code with an N, not and like it's kind of a play on the big site Leet Code with an L. You started that YouTube channel doing Leet Code challenges before you had your first developer job.
Yeah, that's right. So it was about 4 years ago. And so I guess the way I originally told the story was like I graduated 4 years ago. It was kind of the pandemic. I didn't have a job at the time. So then I started a YouTube channel because I was already preparing for coding interviews myself. So I was like, why not make some videos just explaining how they work? I can learn from it. I can help people at the same time. And so then I think a little over a year after that, I was able to get an interview at Google, and I passed that interview. And then I got the job. And then I kind of, you know, took a break from the YouTube stuff. I didn't really focus on it a ton. So that's how I originally told the story. The longer story is I actually did have a job after I graduated. I was working at Amazon for about two long months, however you want to think about it. And then I actually voluntarily left that job and wasn't a smart choice in many ways. And then that's why I was unemployed. And so that's why I kind of started the YouTube channel.
Two excruciating months at Amazon, which led you to grind Leet Code and then apply at Google.
Yeah, it made me so crazy that like I just wanted to sit in my room all day just solving Leet Code problems, if you can believe that. But I guess I just want to be careful with how I say it, because I'm definitely not trying to bash any particular company or any... I'm not trying to scare anybody in any way. I'm just kind of giving my perspective, because I think, you know, people don't really talk about the things that they messed up on. Because kind of like how I said, like, it's smart if you brand yourself as like ex-Google. It's smart if you how you brand yourself. Like, hey, I worked at this company and then I left. But, you know, nobody wants to talk about, you know, I worked at a company and, you know, I didn't feel great about myself. I actually wasn't succeeding there, and I was scared I was going to get fired. And then, you know, I was so scared I left voluntarily. Like, that's, you know, a lot of people will hear that and think that's really dumb. And it kind of was financially, because had I stayed at the job, one, I would have continued to make money, even if they did fire me, which is, I think, a fear that's overblown in most cases. But even if they did, then I would have been able to collect unemployment, at least like in the US, which is where I'm based. So financially, just a horrible decision. So, you know, I guess I shared that. I was embarrassed of that. That's why I didn't really talk about it on YouTube until I think last summer-ish.
This idea of like how you tell your story, I don't think we've talked enough about on this podcast, but it's really interesting, because I've hired a lot of engineers over the years, maybe like a lot by some people's standards, probably like 15 or so. And in hiring those 15 engineers, I've interviewed a lot more people. And one thing I've found is that some people are really bad at like telling their story of like their past employment history. A really easy one is like, I don't get why people offer up information about like failures on the job if they're not like directly being asked and like essentially forced not to lie, right? Like, I do not believe in lies of omission when you're in a job interview, right? Like, I've asked people like, where did you work last? And they're like, oh, like I was at XYZ company and then I got laid off. It's like, well, I didn't ask you if you got laid off. You didn't have to tell me that. You could have just said that you worked at XYZ company, right? You should have made me dig for the fact that you were laid off, at least in my opinion. Because again, like, I'm not advocating for lying about your past work history, but like, tell it in the best possible light that you possibly can is kind of my take.
I would 100% agree. And I think like, as somebody who was kind of somebody who probably was a little too honest in some ways, because like in my mindset, and I think other people might have the same mentality, you think that people will respect that. People will respect that you were like honest, but there is a bias. Like, even if the person on the other end is on your side and they want to help you, there is kind of a bias. Like, oh, well, you know, maybe it wasn't their fault that, you know, they got laid off, but who knows, maybe it was. And so yeah, it's just not a smart strategy to do that voluntarily. Like, you're not probably going to earn any points. And so I wouldn't do it. Like, I think content creation is definitely different than like the real world in some regards. Like, there's a reason most people don't, you know, make posts when they, you know, have some kind of failure.
Yeah. The way I say it is like, I have never seen any form of pity or like, you know, feeling sorry for a candidate actually work out in the candidate's favor. Like, you always just want to kind of put forth this like confidence that you are going to be able to do the job, because the person on the other side of the table, they're talking to like 10, 15, 20, 50 people, and it's literally their job to make the best choice. And if they don't do that, they're on the line, right? They're on the hook. They want somebody that's going to make their job easier. So like, they want to be confident in you. You want to be confident in you. Yeah, I've never seen anyone get a job out of like sympathy, right? Which would almost be unethical, like if you really think about it. The only ethical thing to do when you're hiring is to try to pick the best candidate.
Yeah, I think I agree 100%.
So tell me a little bit about LeetCode. You left Amazon, you started grinding LeetCode, and then you got a job in Google. Like, why LeetCode? A lot of people that are in between jobs try a lot of different things, right? Contributing to open source, building projects, doing courses, doing LeetCode. Like, why was LeetCode your go-to?
I think that's a really good question, because I don't have a great answer for it from back then. I think, so my perspective is that I got a four-year degree, computer science. I knew how to code. I didn't know a lot of like the real world stuff. I knew Git basics. I knew how to do a basic full stack app and all that stuff. And so about getting hired, there's kind of two elements to it: get the interview and then pass the interview. And that's really it, right? When you boil it down, those are the two things. And how you do that is very complicated. There's a lot of stuff involved. I was in a phase where the problem I actually had was getting the interview. And it was during the pandemic where like hiring was slowed for like 6 to 12 months. And it's not as bad as it is now with like hiring in terms of just like the market, but it was still similar. And so I thought, if I can just get the interview, I know I can pass if I grind LeetCode. That was like my mentality. It was not the smartest, but yeah, that's kind of the
route. Why do you say it wasn't the smartest?
Because I think had I developed my skills, like the amount of time and effort that I think I put into LeetCode, and LeetCode, whatever criticisms people have about it, and usually the criticisms are because of this, LeetCode is not easy as you get into harder and harder problems. If you can solve some LeetCode hard problems, the amount of time and effort it takes you to do that, you can build some impressive projects doing that. Not like basic full stack CRUD, just reading and writing from a database, but like genuinely impressive, adding complex tools into that. And those skills 100% are more relevant to jobs. And they look more impressive on a resume. And I think had I focused on that, I would have probably been a better developer, holistically at least. And I would have maybe gotten more interviews. You can never predict, you can never know for 100%. But I think probably that. Now, that said, when I did get an interview, and actually people might not believe me, but in that, yeah, go ahead.
No, I just want to make sure I understood. So you're saying if you would have done what differently exactly?
Had I think, focused on less on Leetcode, maybe I could have still done Leetcode, but just focused on building something impressive, building something genuinely different than other people, taking things that I already knew, taking the concepts of how to build a full stack app and then trying to do something slightly different.
So building a unique project.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I did not expect to hear this from you. This is really interesting. I expected you to sit down and be like, Leetcode, motherfucker. That's basically what Melky said when I had him on almost a year ago. I actually had to coax him a little bit, and he ended up having a more nuanced position. But at first, he was just 12 hours Leetcode, bitch. So that's kind of what I expected when I scheduled the pod.
I love Melky. I've had a few conversations with him. He even said, and I don't know if he's just saying this to be nice to me, but he said he used to watch some of my videos and that helped him. So he's a super nice guy. But one thing, I've made a lot of Leetcode videos. I've given advice on Leetcode. I've explained tutorials. I've done videos outside of that. I've never made a single video telling people they should solve Leetcode problems. Not one time, not a single time did I say hey, you want to be a developer? Solve some Leetcode problems. I've never even made a video telling people how to become a developer. I just tell them, usually people already are solving Leetcode problems, and I just tell them, this is a better approach to do it. Follow this pattern, follow these guidelines and that kind of stuff. Very rarely do I try to give a personal advice. I just kind of share my stories and tell people what worked for me and what didn't. That said, it's nearly impossible to get into a big tech company like Google without grinding Leetcode at this point in time. It's just not really possible at this point.
I'm particularly interested in this because your background is in Amazon and Google. So listeners know this. My background is in small to medium sized startups. I love startups. I love working at startups. And my approach to getting jobs at startups is very much project based. You got to show up, you got to show that you can ship stuff, that you can read docs, that you can build things. And in my experience, the interview process at smaller companies is very different than the interview process at Google or Amazon. And I did actually interview at Google when I first graduated from college. I was halfway through the process. I was about two and a half interviews in with Google, and all of my interviews were extremely technical, where they were having me write algorithms. Unfortunately, in a Google Doc, it was awful. I wonder if that was that your same experience? You had to do it in a Google Doc?
Very similar to a Google Doc. It's slightly better where the tabbing is more consistent. So you don't have to tab three times to get to the same indent level.
What
so
year was this that you applied?
It was 2021.
Okay. For me, it was 2016 or 2017. And there was nothing. It was just a goddamn Google Doc. It was terrible. But I very much got the perception okay, this is how they do interviews. So again, my perception is Leetcode is the thing to do if your goal is definitely to work at large FANG companies. So it's interesting to hear, do you have that opinion as well? Or do you still think, no, just actually build really great projects, and maybe the projects have to incorporate hard things that you would maybe do in a Leetcode hard? How do you think about that?
That's an interesting question, because I guess the way I thought about it is, at the end of the day, the interview, you said, it's going to be data structures and algorithms. And so you do have to pass that interview. But I guess how you do it, there is some room for creativity. You don't necessarily have to do Leetcode problems. You could do projects that you have to get creative, because full stack apps usually don't have a ton of data structures and algorithms. But if you get into operating systems, databases and stuff, then you realize these algorithms are used in certain places. So I guess there's that approach. Now, that said, I'm not unique in this opinion that Leetcode is the way. Everybody's doing it. Everybody's heard of it. Everybody talks about it. And in terms of the big tech stuff, there's forums online where people are just talking about, hey, I did 500 Leetcode problems. Do I have a chance of getting in? So there is that. I'm not saying you have to do 1,000 problems or whatever, but at the end of the day, Leetcode is the straightforward path. It's the established path. Hundreds of thousands of people have taken it, and it generally works to get into big tech.
Yeah, that's my perception. And that's why I like having people like you on to talk about it, because I don't know about getting into big tech, because I never got into big tech. Okay, so your approach then, it sounds like, well, actually, I want to hear it from you. If you've got someone whose goal is to get into Google in 2024, 2025, what's the approach? Let's assume that they have computer science degree level knowledge. Whether they got a degree or not is irrelevant, but like that's kind of where they're at.
I wouldn't. It's definitely a good goal to set, like to say, okay, this year is when I'm going to do it. I wouldn't try to put like a hard timeline on it though. Like whatever your goals are, whether it's, you know, startups or big tech or whatever, like your long-term goal is, even people who want to get into big tech, usually their goal, believe it or not, isn't to work in big tech for 20 years. Like they, many times people are ambitious. They want to learn at big tech, then they want to do their own company, then they want to like do whatever. So I wouldn't put like a hard time on it. Even if big tech is your goal, like you'll quickly realize that, you know, there's other companies that you might have never heard of that pay just as well, that have good benefits, and probably you might enjoy working at them more, startups or bigger companies, all kinds of companies. That said, I will try to answer your question. So whether you're confident you can get the interview or not, there's a lot of people I know that actually get interviews, but they can't pass them. They need to focus on like the LeetCode area. There's a lot of people I know who can't get the interview, but you know, if they did, they would kill that LeetCode interview because they've just been doing it almost like their whole life. Like they've been just solving these problems obsessively to the point. And I think this is probably John Cricket's point. If you're in that boat, you know, you've solved 1,000 problems. LeetCode is probably not your issue. You're kind of in the same boat I was. LeetCode was not my issue. I could have passed most interviews. And I think, you know, to this day, I still can, but you want to fix the problem. You want to, which is usually getting the interview. And I think there's a lot of ways to do that. And it's not like a straightforward answer as like LeetCode is. Like LeetCode will pass the interview, but getting the interview can be a lot more complicated, I think.
These days, with like the proliferation of applicant tracking systems and how hard it is, like, and remote work, it's like a bunch of things happened in like 2020 and beyond that all of a sudden made it way harder to get an interview than it was before. And it's not necessarily a supply and demand problem, because like in 2020 and 2021, like companies were dying to hire developers, but it was still like kind of hard to get an interview. And now in 2022, 2023, it's like really hard to get an interview. I look at like a couple things. One of them is like proliferation of remote work. So when every job goes remote, that means everyone in the world can apply for it, right? Which just means that like companies are sifting through way more applications than they were before. So we have this problem of getting the interview and then the problem of passing the interview. A lot of people struggle knowing which one is their problem. How can you know? Like as a beginner, how do you know if it's that you're having trouble finding interviews or that you're having trouble passing interviews?
Yeah, I think if you're like really, really a beginner, you might have like a problem with both. And at that point, I think even then, it might be better to just start working on your skills such that like you can get an interview, because those skills are the same skills you're actually going to use on the job. Most likely, you know, there's a lot of companies that don't even do LeetCode style interviews, believe it or not, like you said, like startups and a lot of other companies. So I think approach it in that way. Like, it's hard for me to give kind of clear cut advice because I don't know each individual and like markets change and stuff. So I try to give like high level advice. Just try to see what works for you. Like what exactly is your goal? And if you have like a really, really big goal that seems unattainable right now, try to set a smaller goal. Just try to get any position that you can. Try to network with people via social media where you can maybe see like if they have projects that they need help with, and maybe you've done a project that's similar to that, and you can contribute almost immediately in that case. And you might not get a ton of pay, but it's a way to kind of grow your skills, meet people, and get some experience that you can put on your resume. So I think try to approach it in that way. Like try to think about it a little bit more creatively if you can.
One of the reasons I'm such a big advocate of building projects generally is if you build a really great project that is not only a difficult project to build, so it like shows off your skills, but is also remarkable in some way, like is interesting, right? Like grabs the attention of someone who's reading about it. It's the kind of thing that might get a few upvotes on Hacker News or whatever. Is that you can put it on a resume and it's maybe interesting enough to get you in the door. Is there anything like that with LeetCode? Like, can you list something on your resume, like solved 1,152 LeetCode hards? How do you think about that?
I think probably not. That said, the reason I tell people to be creative is because that was actually something I did not do. Even when I was not able to get a job, I got to a point where my channel had, you know, over 10,000 subscribers, and I was getting consistently maybe a couple thousand views a video, or maybe a bit more than that. And so if I was creative, if I was a little bit smarter, I could have said, one, I could have put some of that stuff on my resume, because rather than just solving legal problems, I published solutions, and I published them such that it got an audience, so that there's some quality, there's something there, like a statistic I can put on there. And also that I could have asked people, hey, any of you 10,000 people know anybody who's hiring? Because clearly I could probably pass the interview, and, like, you know, I have some skills that you can kind of demonstrably, like, that I've demonstrated publicly. Like, it's not just that I've solved the problem closed in my room. I solved the problem on video, and I walk through my thought process. You can kind of see how I think. That's a little bit more than just, you know, doing it solo. So I think that would be helpful, I guess, if somebody is doing like LeetCode problems, like try to see more value that you can do. Like, you have this skill. Can you somehow share that skill with other people? Can you contribute in any way to other people? Because you probably know this as more than I do. People are always looking for skilled people. It's hard to find really skilled people, though. Like, it's hard to find people who have a balance of things, and even just technical skills. Like, believe it or not, there are a lot of people who can put a project on their resume, but they, you know, if you ask them, like, hey, can you explain a little bit of this code? They probably couldn't. They probably just, you know, line for line followed a tutorial. And that's not the worst way to learn if you're just brand new, but you kind of have to break out of that box. You have to write a little bit of original code. You know, you just have to take it step by step, like expand your knowledge base. Just don't expect somebody to give you a list, 1, 2, 3, do exactly this and everything's going to be fine. Unfortunately, it usually doesn't work like that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny. I had a student on Boot Dev get to, like, it was the second, I believe, second or third guided project in our, like, big long learning path of, like, you know, back end developer career path. And one of the big things we talk about a lot is, like, okay, you need to get out of tutorial hell, which I define as the only thing you're able to do is follow step by step tutorials, right? You need to read or watch something that shows you what's the next step to take. What's the next step to take? This person got to this guided project, and it's, like, pretty hands off. It's almost more like working with a product manager who's like, okay, now you need to build this functionality. Go build it, like, and then come back and, you know, you can, like, check these criteria to make sure you actually built it correctly. And they were like, whoa, for, like, a project or for a curriculum that talks about getting out of tutorial hell, this is weird. I would expect a lot more guidance. I'm like, counterintuitively, it's actually the opposite. Like, we need to get you off of those training wheels at some point, right? There's a time for training wheels, but there is a time to get off of them. And you'd be, I'm right there with you. Like, you'd be amazed how many people are out there on the job search kind of thinking that they're ready, but they're just not. There's so much more that they could do, and it would really help them stand out, in my opinion.
Yeah. And so I think this is the part where I might even start getting a little bit controversial.
Oh,
so
yeah.
So I'm going to say, you know, I got a CS degree, 4-year college. CS degrees are great. People who go to college are great. People who are self-taught are also great, right? Like, it's very hard to, like, categorize a person. That said, a lot of people might not realize this. So let me say something encouraging to people who are self-taught. A lot of people who go to college for 4 years, they write, you know, you do a lot of math in college. You do a lot of unrelated stuff. You do a lot of programming as well. Even those people can't write original code. A lot of people will cheat in college. Nobody
Surprise.
Really talks about this.
Yeah.
A lot of people, the same way, you know, you're following a tutorial, can't figure out the thing, just watch the rest of the video.
Chegg,
right?
Built a huge business on cheating in college.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. It's like, I don't know why nobody talks about it. Like, that's why a lot of people have a hard time getting a job. You could be somebody who has a 4-year degree or is self-taught. You've learned, you have the skills, right? You put them on your resume. It's really hard for an employer to distinguish between somebody who's legitimate, who really did those things, who really understands those things, and somebody who just kind of cheated. And that's why the best way to differentiate yourself, do something nobody else did, at least a little bit. Publish your own app. You know, there's publish your own app and maybe try, you might not succeed, try to create something of value that can either generate revenue or has active users that's actually used by people. That is hard to fake. Nobody can fake that, because if a million people make the same app, you're not going to get users, right? So that's a perspective I think I have.
I don't think that, at least these days, that's all that controversial. I agree with you completely. I talk about this a lot. I released a video on Free Code Camp. Oh, it's been probably 4 months now, about strategies for getting a developer job. And I brought on a ton of guests and we talked about it. The biggest thing I keep coming back to is, like, you've got to show whoever you're talking to, whether it's a recruiter, CEO of a startup, hiring manager, coworker, you got to show some, like, signal in the noise. You've got to show some proof, right, that you actually can do the things you're saying you can do, because everyone is saying it, right? And it's really easy to say it, and people want to be shown it. And so that's why projects are great, and that's why projects that are remarkable are so great. And as you pointed out, that's why projects that are remarkable and have social proof, which is like GitHub stars, users, NPM downloads, anything that shows that people actually find what you did valuable and good, goes a long way. Because like you said, it can't be faked. And I think sometimes it's hard to understand how important this is, because it's easy to think, like, a resume is a resume. It's just like words on a page. They're all the same. But it's really not. Like, little tidbits of information in your resume really can, like, make you stand out a lot more. Like, just tweaking one sentence on a resume, right? From saying, I built Project X, to I built Project X and it has 1500 stars on GitHub, right? Like, that makes me go click through. I would say tier one is, like, build something. Tier two is build something interesting. And tier three is, like, build something interesting that you can prove that other people care about, either with, like, revenue or downloads or, like, social shares or something.
I completely agree. And I think, like, it's not just, I don't want people to think that we're, like, kissing each other's asses or anything. So, like, but that said, like, for anybody watching, like, me and Lane, like, we don't know each other super well, but I know enough about him that I'm going to, like, speculate. I'm going to, like, put words in your mouth. When somebody, like, there's a lot of people in the content creation space. There's a lot of people who are trying to help teach people how to code. I bet when you thought of the idea for boot.dev, but tried to approach it that way, I bet you didn't, that idea didn't just come to you by, like, watching videos and seeing what everybody else is doing to create something unique in the way that you did for boot.dev, which I assume, like, most people watching are familiar with, or, you know, maybe they'll click it and check it out. But to create a unique idea, you have to kind of think for yourself a little bit. And I think that's hard. Like, you have to take a bunch of knowledge you already learned and then apply it in a way that's unique, like doing something different. And that's how you create value. So, like, tutorials, absolutely fine. Like, that's how you're going to learn. And, you know, you probably wouldn't have had the many of the ideas that you did if you didn't have the experience that you did. But, you know, you have to do a little bit of original thinking, and there's no tutorial that can show you how to do that. There's no book, there's nothing. It's the hard part, but it's the fun part. Everybody has a unique perspective, and you might have good ideas, you might have bad ideas, but you got to try them and see what works.
The early version of boot dev sucked, especially compared to, like, what it is now. I would take what you said, which is, like, you need to put a little thought into it, and say, if you really want to make something, like, pretty remarkable, you need to put a lot of thought into it. And I want to be clear. When I say, like, tier one is build something good, tier two is build something interesting or remarkable, and tier three is, like, get social proof, you don't actually need tier three to get a job. I want to be, like, crystal clear about that. You can get a job with just, like, a good project. And I know tons of developers that have. But my philosophy is basically, like, if you're having trouble getting a job, you might as well, while you're looking, kick it up a notch, right? Because that'll just make your job search easier as you keep going forward. And on the topic of not kissing each other's asses, maybe I'll try to bring up something that might be a little more controversial. Maybe you'll even disagree with me. This might be fun. We're both kind of, the cringy term is content creators at this point. And one thing I see a lot of is when content creators talk to developers about getting jobs, it's important to understand that, like, our roles are different. Lane, as the CEO of Boot Dev and host of Backend Banter, I have a completely different job than I did 2 years ago when I was, like, Lane engineering manager. Like, it's a very different job. And what I've seen is content creators giving advice to developers that's actually advice for content creators. Oh, you should, like, start a blog and start a YouTube channel, and that's how you're gonna get noticed as a developer. And this is maybe my more controversial take. I think that's actually bullshit for like 99% of developers, because in my work in the real world, like the 100 plus engineers I've worked with, not a single goddamn one of them was a content creator that had like a blog with more than, I don't know, 10,000 views, right? There's actually not that many developers that like to create content. So my take is like, yes, social proof is like gravy, but I do not want anyone thinking that my opinion is you need to create content online and have it get attention in order to get your first job as a developer.
I definitely agree.
Damn it.
Yeah, I think I'll just leave it there. I agree. Because I guess I'll give a little more of a nuanced take in that. I mean, it does help. Like, we're kind of in the age of like social media. There's just too much social media, in my opinion. Like, I go on LinkedIn. It's not my favorite social media platform.
Is it anyone's?
Yeah, I'm not a fan of like TikTok or Instagram Reels. I really just don't understand how they work, but they work. And they work to like meet people. They work to network. So if you understand those, I think you kind of have to play your game. Like, not everybody is going to be a content creator. If everybody makes a video, they're not going to get a ton of views. Like, statistically, we just have a limited amount of time. So you kind of have to approach it with your skill set, the things that you want to do. Like, I wanted to make elite code videos. I guess that's part of the reason why I did it. I genuinely enjoyed it. I saw like progression. It was slow, but it was like progression. And I thought, this is fun. I enjoy it. I'm getting better at interviewing. I'm helping people. I'll do this for as long as I can until I can get an actual job. And for other people, it might be writing. For other people, it might just be building projects and sharing what they're building via social media in the hopes of either building an audience or just meeting people. Like, if somebody sees you did something interesting nowadays, you know, Primogen might make a video about it, right? Somebody, some content creator might make a video about it. They might like it. You might get some exposure in that way. You know, whatever you're doing, try to share it in some way. Like, if you're just sitting in your room, like I do most of the day, and you're really good, but nobody knows about it, then it's going to be really hard to get in front of somebody.
The funny thing is, if you think historically, development, especially like open source development, it's always kind of been a social network. It just hasn't been on Web 2.0 social networks like Facebook and Twitter and, right? Like, it's like Linux mailing lists and university forums and stuff. But like, there's always been this like social sharing aspect. You know, somebody made some really cool thing and put it somewhere, and then people saw it. You can make videos about your projects. You could blog about it. You could put it on GitHub. I'm with you. Like, the friction to share your project is incredibly low. You don't have to do content creation about your project if you don't want to. You don't have to like go make a YouTube video about it, blog about it, go make some, what I would consider like extra media asset about the project if you don't want to. You could literally post a link to it on Hacker News or whatever. If what you're saying is like the friction to share is low, therefore you probably just should, if you built an interesting thing. And like, building an interesting thing is like the hard step number one, that frankly, most people don't even build an interesting thing. Maybe start there. Once you do, like, I'm with you. Like, you probably should be sharing that.
I guess I don't have too much more to say on that.
Circle back to Neat Code for a second. Tell me a little bit about like the Neat Code philosophy. Like, people that come to Neat Code to grind Leet Code, what is in their head and what problem are they trying to solve in their life? Are they trying to get that next job? Are they just like, generally speaking, trying to upskill? Are they trying to go from junior to senior? What's the value proposition to students of Neat Code?
Yeah, I think so. The best way for me to explain it, rather than, I haven't done as much like user, like understood my user as much as I should have, because in a way I see myself as the user. And so I'll kind of share like my journey and then kind of explain like how that solves certain problems for people. So like when I started Leet Code, the first time I did it was like 2018. That was like 3 years after Leet Code launched. And so certain problems, like you go on Leet Code, you can't figure out the problem. And that's perfectly fine. So you go look at the solution, try to understand it. There's a forum on Leet Code. People share their solutions. And the thing about smart people is like, they really want you to know how smart they are. Like, they don't want to help you. They don't want to like make you smart. They just want you to know, like, hey, I'm smart. Don't worry about how I got here. Don't like ignore the fact it took me all these years to get here. Just look how beautiful my code is. Look how confusing it is. Look how elegant it is. There's no way you're going to understand it. And so I'm not even going to put a paragraph explanation telling you how it works. That was the Leet Code forum in 2018. So that's how I learned. I would read solutions, and it took me a long time. Like, some of those hard problems, the solutions are hard enough to understand with an explanation. Without, you're going to be there for hours. And so that's how I learned. And so I was like, okay, by the time I did understand it and I understood exactly how it worked, I was like, okay, I guess I'll put a video out there. So I think the shortcut is that, like, if somebody is stuck on a problem, some of these you'll never figure out in your life. You could spend a year on it. There's a good chance you'll never figure out the algorithm. So you have to look at the solution. You can read somebody's solution that's really confusing, or you can watch like a 20-minute video, 15-minute video, and then you'll just save time doing that. So I think that's the biggest value proposition. I think that's why my channel grew in the first place. Most elite code videos before me, most of them, I don't know all of them, but most of them, they would type out the solution, but they really wouldn't explain how it works. So I think that's kind of been my strength. And I think most people would agree that I did a better job than my predecessors. I'm not saying like I'm perfect, but I think I did a little bit better than everybody else was doing. And the other thing is, in terms of just, so most of the videos and resources I made are free. So I think that's why people have came to me. There have been other people who launched paid products that did the same thing. And so I think that was one big thing. Now, that said, I did create a few paid products as well. And so the way I like try to think about it is like, I just want to provide value to people. So I think, you know, I created, let's say, an algorithms course. I didn't take that algorithms course myself when I was preparing for interviews. So theoretically, other people don't need that course. Like, nobody needs to take my course. But I think it's still valuable because, one, I spent more time learning that stuff than I should have. More than I would even like to admit. Not 10 hours or 20 hours, probably like over 100 hours. So theoretically, if, let's say, a course, to keep the math simple, let's say $100, it saves you 30 hours or something like that. If you value your time, if 1 hour of your time is worth like a few bucks, then I think it's a good value proposition. That said, you know, I still have free resources that I try to like help people with. So that's kind of how I justify it. Because as you know, like, we're in kind of an age, and like, feel free to stop me if I go too long or if I even get too controversial, but we're in kind of an age where like a lot of people, I think, you know, before boot.dev were creating, a lot of content creators were creating courses just because they had a big audience. So like, hey, I might as well create something that you can already do for free on YouTube. I might as well make it paid and then earn some money. And, you know, the interesting thing about those courses, they would not even create their own website. They would use a pre-existing platform, Kabaji. I don't even know if I'm saying that right, but just
Teachable,
some,
yeah.
Yeah, Teachable. You're a software engineer. You created your own thing and you're selling to me a service. You did not even code the site. So it's like, when I launched mine, I was like, I'm not using a platform. I know how to code. If I, like, I'm going to prove it to people. I coded my own platform. Same with boot.dev, right? We proved it. Like, this is what we do. We created some software and we proved that we had that skill. And second, by doing that, we differentiated most other platforms. Like, you don't have a code editor, you don't have a lot of functionality, it's usually very simple. So it's like, in doing that, you prove it to people that we can do this, we have the skills, and you create a much better product than what other people are doing. I think,
first of all, like, you definitely don't need to be worried about the ethics of charging for good content on this podcast. Like, people that are listening to this podcast, like, they get it. It takes a lot of time and resources to build something good. Frankly, in my opinion, the best way to monetize that is just to sell it directly to users, because anything else is weird. There's the saying, if you're not paying for the product, you are the product, right? The only other way to monetize and like support yourself doing that, in my opinion, is like, I shouldn't even say in my opinion, like, this is pretty much factual at this point, is to like basically do ads. Like, it's like the only other way around is to try to monetize through ads. So I don't think there's anything wrong personally with charging for good content. I feel like we've stumbled into something really interesting on boot.dev, where we've been able to make all of our content free and all of our interactivity paid. And that's been kind of like a novel thing that I haven't seen on other like education platforms. And like, to be clear, NeatCode's very different. NeatCode's more of like me and you've talked about this on offline. It's like a little bit different of a, almost of like an industry. NeatCode is, and LeetCode are like coding challenges and interview prep almost. And, you know, boot.dev is more of 0 to 1 as a developer, like education. Because the standard model in like what I would call the bottom of influencer course hell in like 2020 was, yeah, like influencers that had a following online throwing up a video on Teachable that was basically the same as like what they were putting on YouTube, but like maybe a little bit more time went into it, and then like charging money for it. Again, I don't have anything from a like an ethical or moral standpoint against that. Right? If you're making great content and you want to sell it, I have no problem with that. But from a business standpoint, I've actually found that that model is hard to sell because people expect the content to be free, right? I'm not saying you can't do it or shouldn't do it, but like it's hard to do. There's a lot of great free content out there. So building a custom platform on BootDev or like what you did with Neatcode, I think has really helped us grow because like really what we're offering is like a product, this interactive thing where you're writing code and getting solutions. And in our case, like chatting with Boots, this is like our, you know, GPT-4 enabled little mascot dude, earning achievements. So it's like you're paying for this interactive experience that makes the process more fun. Or in the case of Neatcode, I mean, it's the same as LeetCode, right? It's like this interactive challenge-based feedback loop.
I think that's right. And for the record, I'm definitely not like hating on anybody or attacking anybody, because anytime somebody's selling something, you know, nobody's forced to buy it. And, you know, so it's not anything like that. That said, like, I agree with from a business standpoint, it just makes a lot more sense. I think the reason people don't do it or hadn't done it in the past is because I think it actually did work more in the past than it is now. I think now it's at a point where, you know, certain the big thing that like there's scattered videos all across YouTube. If somebody goes on like a big scavenger hunt, they can find a bunch of resources, pool them together. But I think, you know, people are willing to like pay for an experience like this will. I know this has is it's comprehensive. It puts things together in a way like it's sequential, or it gives me like a roadmap, or it gives me whatever. And I think that's like where a lot of value comes from. I think that's kind of why, that's why I originally created my site. Like I had a big catalog of like YouTube videos, and I realized that like, it's hard for people to search through them. So if I just put them like on a website, I have more control over how I present that. And I think that's probably one of the reasons that things have like worked out for me.
Yeah. I mean, I love nerding out about like the business model of BootDev and being like super transparent about how it all works. And my take is basically in 2024, I think there's two things, and you kind of touched on both of them. The first is like the bar has raised. It's a lot harder in 2024 to just sell a video course than it was 4 years ago for exactly the reasons you mentioned, like everything's on YouTube, which I would argue is a great thing for society. Like it's fantastic that most stuff is just available for free. That means if you want to like make a living teaching or, you know, building kind of content for developers, you have to figure out how to like level it up so that it is worth paying for. And I'd argue there's two things. One is exactly what you said, which is basically curation, right? It's like, instead of having to go find all these disparate resources and like, you're not sure the quality of all of them, there is value in like having it all in one place from someone you trust to put it together and like do it. So like, that's one thing that I've seen be kind of a pattern over the last couple of years. The other one is the second thing you mentioned, which is experience. It's like, if you can build an experience that's more engaging, right, where you're like less likely to get bored, or you're, you know, more forced to like do the hard thing, like build the hard project instead of just like zoning out in front of a video for 7 hours. Building that experience, I think, is also something that at least I've found people are willing to pay for that experience.
Yeah, 100%. And I think it just goes to like people like, everybody, it's very easy to like copy other ideas. It's kind of the same as like the resume projects that we were talking about. Like even on YouTube, like you see thumbnails, everybody's just like, thumbnails look the exact same. People use a certain style. People will copy so much to the point where they forget why it works in the first place. They forget what they're even doing. Like they're just like going along with the trend. And I think Jeff Bezos has, I don't even remember the quote, maybe you do, but it's like, don't focus on like competitors, focus on like the customer, focus on the actual experience from like first principles, like what makes something good and what makes something bad. Don't just like short-term success, like you might be able to get there just by like following what other people are doing. But at some point, you know, to really make it last longer, to make it consistent, to make growth consistent, you do have to like really, really focus on things that other people haven't done before. And sometimes you might mess up, you might fail, you might have a bad idea, and sometimes you have good ideas.
I can't believe a disgruntled ex-Amazon employee would quote Bezos at a time like this.
Yeah, I think Yeah, I mean,
I'm just kidding. I know you're not disgruntled.
Yeah, I mean, I have a lot of respect for like Amazon's culture in some ways, because Google was like the exact opposite. And, you know, I'll say, like, I enjoyed working at Google more, but, you know, I was in meetings where like the managers, I was like, okay, so this is my first time on like a really big project like this. It seems like this is very disorganized, but maybe that's just how it works. And then, you know, a few months later, project gets canceled, and I'm like, okay, so they really didn't have any idea what they were doing. So the fact that like every week they had a completely different plan, somebody really just didn't know what they were doing. And I feel like at Google, at least, like, people are a little bit too nice. At Amazon, maybe it's the opposite, but yeah.
I'm going to tell you my perception from the outside, and you can tell me what you think. There's this quote from the IT crowd where the boss of this corporation is like, this is a really sexy place to work where like people are really attractive, and they walk around and they just don't really get a lot of work done. And like, that's kind of my perception of Google. If you like take out the attractiveness part, people kind of, you know, ideas people, I don't know, milling around, like the margins are so fat because Google as a business is just so incredibly profitable. And like, they're just like trying stuff and it doesn't work, so they delete it and they like try something else. And like, you know, employees are compensated really well. And I don't know. Again, this is all perception. I don't fucking know. But like, it feels like you don't actually have to like ship things. Like, you just kind of like show up and do things. And I don't know, maybe it turns out. And whereas like my perception of Amazon from the outside is like the bottom line. Like, we're shipping stuff. We got numbers to hit.
If you got to pee, there's a water bottle right there.
Yeah, exactly. You're like working on a desk made out of someone's door because we don't want to buy you a desk. Am I even close? Like,
I mean, I'll say like that's like the common perception. Obviously, like, you, I don't have to tell you this. It's a little extreme, but like, in general, like, there's some truth to that. At least from my experience, I obviously can't speak for everybody's experience. I don't want to. In case somebody from Amazon or Google is watching this, I am not speaking for you. And You know, there's a great people, there's super smart people working at both companies, hardworking and all that. So that's the disclaimer. That said, yeah, like at Google, I think I've heard it's changed a little bit now over the last year or two, but it was a little bit too relaxed. And like you said, like, the margins are just so fat that it's hard to be motivated sometimes. I was in cloud though, where the margins are not so fat. So it was a little bit different, but I don't know. And I'm kind of speculating too, because people who are watching this, I don't know, I think you might have like a big gaming audience. Like, people might have heard of Stadia, right? Like, Google Stadia. Technically speaking, that wasn't a horrible product. I'm pretty sure Microsoft is going to do the exact same thing, but they're going to be a little bit smarter. And maybe 5 or 10 years from now, everybody's going to be doing cloud gaming. So why did Google fail? Like, I was just sitting there asking myself, I saw the headline. I was like, what's going on? I did a little bit of research. And, you know, technically, nobody had built something as good as Stadia at the time. Technically, like, the engineers are probably among the smartest in the world. So why did it fail? Like, the management has just no idea what they're doing sometimes. That's like the only answer I have for it, because I genuinely feel like if you took a 16-year-old kid who just plays video games all day, they could be a better manager for Stadia than some of those executives. They're just so out of touch. I genuinely wonder if they just never played games before, because Stadia launched, it didn't have any games. What are you going to do? Their whole strategy is just, it just doesn't work. And that can be applied to so many areas. And yeah, before I go too hard, like, yeah, it's just crazy. And Amazon, my experience was like, my team was just pretty horrible. And that's not just my opinion, to be honest. Like, people on the team were very obviously burnt out. Some people would complain in our team chat. They would say like, this feels like a thankless job. They would kind of make comments like that. So they were definitely overworked. I don't blame those engineers. And I saw people making pull requests at 3 a.m. And I saw people reviewing those pull requests at 3 a.m. And yeah, we had deadlines to hit. And I said, you know, peace out.
Google is breaking my heart. Like, I used to be a much bigger fan of a lot of Google products. And right now, for example, Boot Dev runs on GCP, Google Cloud Platform. And the only reason for that is I love their Kubernetes product. I love Autopilot. Like, the one thing Google has going for them, in my opinion, for developers right now, is the fact that Kubernetes on GCP is like the best experience on compared to any other cloud provider. And of course, they're the stewards of the Go programming language, which I love. but like, I'm hanging on by a thread because it feels like at every turn, their product management is trying to disappoint me with everything else. So I don't know how long Boot Dev will be on GCP. I really do hope that they can turn it around and build some interesting stuff. But I'm worried that, like you said, it feels like a very mismanaged company at the moment.
Yeah, I think I can only speak from my experience. I think the products I worked on were actually pretty well run because the director of my area, he had a PhD. He had been working at Google for over a decade. He was very, very technical. And when you're working on a cloud product, you really can't be a manager. You're a manager of boot.dev. If you didn't know how to code, that's disaster. Kind of a problem. Yep. It's not even you can blame somebody. If you don't know how to code, it's really hard to manage a site that's about coding. So with cloud, it's all about distributed systems. And if you don't have, at least some idea of what a database is and what, you have a database in multiple regions and latency issues and things, you're going to be wondering why are customers upset that the latency is so high? What can we do to fix that? And it's like that. And I think a lot of managers are not, some of them are good and some of them might not be great. Yeah.
One of my biggest pet peeves is people wanting to build tech products or products targeted at developers and being but I don't need to code it. I'll hire a coder. I think it's such a disaster. If I stopped coding on the Boot Dev platform completely, why would anyone listen to me about code, right? I wouldn't have anything interesting to say anymore. I wouldn't be able to market it, right? I wouldn't be able to write courses for it. And so it's super important to me that myself and the other engineers that are helping write content are also building product day to day, because that's where we draw inspiration for content from. It's we got to do all the shitty coding things so that we know how to make interesting content around it.
Yeah, 100%. And feel free to stop me, because this is where I might start going on an ego trip. So all job roles are great in tech. Managers, developers, UX people, PMs, they're all great. An engineer is unique, in my opinion, and I think some people would agree, in that they can more easily, 100% more easily transition into a different role than vice versa. 100%. And not even just those technical roles. Somebody who built a product, who coded it, who understands the pros and cons, they can market it better than a marketer. We have people in cloud sales trying to sell cloud products, and if they've never coded, it's kind of hard to do that. Selling a cloud service just based on a few bullet points is kind of hard, because questions are going to come from customers. And second, I think this also goes into a mathematician, somebody with a math PhD. In many cases, you'll see them go into software engineering, and vice versa. It might be kind of hard. I don't have a math PhD. I'm not super mathematical either, but I think it'd be harder for a software engineer to become a mathematician. And so to bring this back to LeetCode, I think, one criticism I hear about LeetCode a lot is that it's not applicable to real jobs. 100% true. But I think somebody who's really, really good at LeetCode can 100% learn the other software engineering skills more easily than somebody who just knows very, very basic coding skills can go into LeetCode, I think.
I'm a bit of a marketing nerd at this point. For the last couple of years, I've been doing a lot of studying of marketing. And I've come to appreciate that there are some hard skills in marketing that you have to pick up. And so I've gained a new respect for good marketers. But I agree with you in a big way, because particularly when we're talking about marketing, I would 100% of the time rather hire a developer who kind of just has a knack for talking to people and being interesting. I would rather take someone who knows how to code and teach them a bit of marketing to market to developers than take a marketer who's, I don't know, been marketing real estate or some shit and teach them coding skills to market to developers. Because it's 80%, and who knows, marketers might come after me for this, but I think that 75 to 80% of a marketing position is just knowing the people that are going to use your product, knowing them really well, knowing their pain, knowing what your product does really well, so that you can write and create content that connects them, right? Problem of the person to whatever your solution is. And that's like 80%. The other 20% is like knowing a bunch of little marketing tricks that, again, are valuable and actually, you know, really, really, really helpful. And like, I don't want to downplay how interesting that is, but I completely agree with you that it's easier to take a developer and make them a marketer than to take a marketer and make them useful at marketing to developers.
Even people I've known with like college degrees in certain areas will kind of say like, this doesn't open as many doors for me as like a STEM degree would. And I think like now that it's kind of getting controversial, people are wondering, should I go to school or not? Should I, you know, learn technical skills or should I just, you know, should I, you know, become a plumber? I think, you know, the value of technical skills goes far beyond just that one task you're doing. Like you kind of, it really opens your eyes to how an entire system can work and how you can, you know, move into different roles. Like I could, if I really wanted to, I could become a technical recruiter at Google. If I could have very easily just switched into that role, I could have very easily gone into cloud sales. A lot of people, though, I will say, are trying to make the opposite decision. I knew a lot of people who are in cloud sales, who are in cloud technical support, who kind of help customers with the issues that they're dealing with on the cloud, and they were trying to transition into software engineering. So it's harder for them to transition into a SWE than it is the other way around.
This has been a great conversation. I really enjoyed this one, man. Yeah. Thanks for coming on. Really quick, tell everyone like where they can find you online. Go ahead and plug all your stuff.
Yeah, for sure. I think Neat Code, whether you Google it or search it on YouTube, you'll find most of my stuff. You can add me on LinkedIn or I'm on pretty much every platform except I think TikTok. So yeah, just searching for Neat Code should find me. And it's been awesome being on here. It's always nice, you know, chatting with people. And I really respect like the work that you've done. Definitely got to do it again sometime. Appreciate it.
Likewise, man. Great. We'll talk again later, man.
Awesome. Thank you.